You're listening to Ignite Your Success, a podcast that inspires fitness professionals to build a strong business that enables them to serve more people and engineer the lifestyle they desire. It's Brad Shepherd here, and together with Jason Yabanowicz, we're best known for running Trainer HQ, a community of passionate and profit-hungry fitness business owners that make a massive difference in others' lives every day. Each episode, we'll unpack for you exactly what's working and deliver best practice strategies so you can confidently grow your business and make a huge impact. It's Brad Shepherd here from Trainer HQ, and I'm here with another Ignite Your Ultimate Success podcast. And I've got somebody along today who is a real inspiration to me in the fitness industry. And this is a podcast that's been something I've anticipated a long time in the waiting. But I'd like to welcome along Mr. Todd Howard. Welcome, sir.
Awesome. Thanks for having us, Brad.
Mate, bloody great to have you. Now, I know you as the Snap Man. You've got quite a few of them. So, mate, do you want to just tell us about your current position in the industry, like how many clubs you got and all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, sure. So currently I have my own brand that we operate the Snap Fitness franchise under, so TBH Group. So obviously CEO of that. That's something we founded a few years ago now when we sort of had enough clubs to make our own brand. But yeah, yep. So Snap Fitness, our main franchise brand, and we've got 42 of those locations.
42,
now.
Wow.
Yeah,
40,
yeah. 43 headaches, but 42 clubs.
And Australia-wide, Snap would have how many clubs?
So we've got about 230 clubs now in Australia and New Zealand.
230.
Which makes up the biggest or the most successful market for Snap globally, even though we don't have the most units. In the US, obviously, has our most clubs.
Yes.
We're the most profitable country in the world.
Oh, wow.
For Snap as a brand.
That's cool, man.
Based on yield and unit economic numbers. So
yeah, that's excellent. And so you got a significant portion of that 230, of course.
Yeah, and I sit on the board for Snap Fitness Australia New Zealand from an advisory perspective. So it's a really good initiative that Snap have, where they have, you know, key people in the network to be a part of the growth and the strategy of the Snap brand going forward.
Fantastic.
Part of a global board as well for IT and marketing and strategy stuff. So really interactive with our US obviously owners and our franchisor. And so sort of balancing working on the brand and in the brand is sort of how I spend my days.
I love it, man. And you're not the only multi-club owner. I think you've told me before in Australia, say specifically, there's a few, I guess we call it groups. Have I got that correct?
Yeah, there's about probably five main groups in Australia.
Yes.
There's a couple of guys that have got a dozen odd clubs.
Yeah.
And probably that next tier down of people that have got that 5 to 8 clubs. So
yeah,
we're probably 3 or 4 times bigger than the second one, which is really cool
after
coming from, you know, one lonely club back when Snap first started. But the groups are becoming a more prominent because the industry's allowing multi-unit owners to become active and the brand is strong enough in the back end to be able to run multiple franchises at the same time, plugging in the same processes and getting the same sort of, I guess, outcomes. And it makes sense, right? Unit economics, having 2, 3 is probably okay. And there's probably a big difference between 3 and 6 and 7. I think that's part of our journey in learning what those leaps are.
Yes.
I think I always got told back in the day it was 8s. I don't know if I believe that now. I think it's tough going from 3 to 5 was a really tough leap. And I think that's sort of where people sit in that 0 to 5. And then takes a long time to get to the 10 because your whole infrastructure changes. And then when you get to 20, 30, 40, you know, we're effectively running a mini franchise now in a global franchise in our office with that many locations spread all over Australia. It's a geographical, you know, business amongst itself to run that properly.
Yeah, it's cool. I used to train Oscar, the famous Brisbane hairdresser, and his thing back in the day, he told me it was either 4 or 40, you know, so.
Yeah, it's a true thing, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's where businesses can get it right or wrong, depending on whether you scale with it or whether you try and keep your team small and stretch them out.
Yeah.
Often that can bring you undone at the other end.
Make so it challenging. Yeah,
that capital up front to sort of stay one step ahead of the clubs you're opening is probably my biggest lesson in growth for sure.
Yeah, super cool, man. Now, you didn't start off owning Snaps. I like to talk about the first time we had our interaction, and I rewind the clock to about 2007, I think it was. And at the time, I was running Peak Physique successfully underneath the roof of Healthworks on the river there. I had my team of 13 trainers. I'm charging $400 a session. You know, I'm killing it. Everything's going really well. And you reached out to me and you were connected to AIPT at the time.
Yep.
And you were like, I want to interview you, man. And, you know, put this in the magazine. And so you were questioning me going, how'd you do this? And how'd you do that? And so forth. And so this for me is holds special because it's like I said to you, hey, it's my turn to return that favor and my turn to learn from you and pick your brain.
Yeah, mate, for sure. I remember being a PT at Fitness First at North Key. In 2000, 2001, you know, under Vinny and Lee there, and this Peak Physique brand was like, who are these guys?
Who are these dudes? Like, yeah,
far out. We're busting our balls here, and to make money as a one-off PT. And this bloke's somehow got a team with them, and they're all making money. And
yeah,
sort of it was in awe in that sort of that 2000, 2005 era. I was obviously starting to be a school teacher and graduated, went out to be a school teacher and that was my real passion alongside PT.
Yeah. Did you actually kick off as a teacher?
Yeah, kicked off, did some teaching at Lewards Hill College here in Brisbane and started an AFL academy out at Victoria Point. And I was really enjoying teaching.
Yeah.
But sort of that 2004, 2005 teaching or education really changed in Australia, well, Queensland in particular, went to very much more curriculum control, and there was a lot less influence that teachers could have on kids learning.
Yeah,
couldn't keep kids back after school, couldn't go on sporting trips without 14 other bits of paperwork and everything that went with it.
So
it really started to put a lid on who I wanted to be and my flair for wanting to help people and young people in particular.
Yeah,
and so I'd always kept the PT on the side as my side hustle, and I really enjoyed that. I specialised in pre and postnatal, and that was a very strategic move for me at the time, thinking that no one was doing it in Australia, and why not? Like, the hardest thing with PT is retention, right? How do I get my client to continue to invest in me after they hit their first goal and their second goal? And you've got to be top of your game to do that.
Yep.
And I thought, hang on, if I work with women that want to be pregnant, I've got them as a client for 9 months, and then I'm like family. So after the baby's born, I got them for the next 9 months because I want to get back to pre-baby.
Absolutely.
So now I've got a 2-year client. So I spent my whole life, you know, through that era, specializing in that and working with that.
Yep.
And that was ended up becoming more a passion than teaching. So I remember quitting teaching randomly on one day. And
what year was that?
2004.
Yeah.
Just walked in and went, I'm over. And my poor mum and dad nearly died. You know, I wanted to be a teacher for my whole life.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Leave the security of a guaranteed
super,
government.
Yeah, you know, like it was the dream. Working 9 to 3, as they say, every teacher will hate me saying that.
10 weeks holiday a year.
They live the dream, those guys. And I thought, this is not me. This is not my passion.
Yeah.
And so I knew, I've always had the philosophy of, if I wake up and I don't have the drive to go to work and change lives today, that I need to do something different or need to look at why that's the case. And so, yeah, I resigned and finished teaching, went out and just went back into PT again and really focused on doing as much as I could for Australian fitness and women and won a few awards, as you do along the way. And then Paul Timms reached out to me and Timsy, obviously another stalwart of the fitness industry.
And
he just founded AIPT at the time, new RTO, and sort of said, look, I want you to come on board and partner with me to sort of grow this brand.
Yeah, and with your education background,
made
great
perfect
fit.
Sense, yeah. Right? And so, off we trotted, set up in Nunda over there and built that AIPT, which is now obviously a juggernaut of a brand.
Absolutely.
A big player in our market and obviously a great part of Snap and our brand now in where we put our trainers through and educate them as well, which has been a great, again, full circle journey. But so I went over there with Paul and you know, use that education background to build the back end of AIPT and establish that. Keeping the PT working on the side as you do as a PT, I don't think you ever let go of it. It's always that side hustle of early mornings, couple of weekend clients, trying to maximize as much as I can earn. I was all about, you know, I had that entrepreneurial attitude, I guess, all the way through.
I
want to continue to do things differently and create things other people hadn't done. And I remember reaching out at the time saying, cool, Paul had said, I'm going to write this magazine. It's going to be the new fitness magazine for Australia, and you're in charge of it. And I'm like, man, I've got to find some content. Like, I think the first couple of magazines, it was like my articles were all the way through it. And so I remember reaching out at the time because it was like, how does someone hold a PT business together at that level, running that many hundreds and hundreds of sessions a week in one city, not all over Australia?
Yeah.
And so
at one gym.
Yeah, like it was nuts. And so I remember that, you know, talking to you that day and inspiring me to be like, you know what? He's just a normal human being.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, Peak Physique at the time was just a brand. But people just believed in it because there was a community amongst those trainers that they all fed off each other, and it wasn't that traditional, you know, every man for himself as a PT in a gym. Everyone kind of knew their lane, stayed in their lane. I really appreciated that as you grew through that and went on to bigger and better things. But
yeah, it's cool. Yeah. And the story is awesome because Paul Timms, I'm BEd trained as well. So I did human movement studies into phys ed, English teaching, secondary. I never ended up in a school. But Timsy, we actually taught him at FitLink College back in the day. Right. So he came in as a student and I was teaching there part-time while I was personal training because, again, that's, you know, the education, that was my passion. And, he was just like gung-ho right from the start. He started his Better Bodies franchise and so forth. And he was just the guy that went for it, wasn't he?
There's a lot of similarities in Timsy's approach, I guess, to my – I was young at the time. I was, you know, 23, 24. And you know, his energy and his passion towards helping people was so similar and aligned to where I wanted to go. And so I looked up to Paul a lot. And, you know, we still keep in touch now all these years later after all of our journeys have gone different directions. But I think – looking back at that era of, you know, the Vinnie Kuhnhovens and Lee Soucy's and yourself and Timsy, like, you know, Phil Foster, you know, you guys were like at the top of your game in my world when I was a junior burger. And and I guess, you know, that whole network has kind of stayed together doing what they love, but in their own areas at excelling. And that's what's been a really cool part of, I guess, being a PT, because it can take you in so many places, but the fundamentals still say ultimately the same. You know, you're not training clients now, but
that's right.
You're doing what you loved
inside the industry.
To help people become that.
Such a great message for people coming through too, to go, hey, there is, you know, there's just so much opportunity out there, you know.
Yeah, so. But like some jobs where it's like, I can become that level of manager and I can't be anything else. Like I think PT ultimately opens up doors everywhere because it's not the product that you're delivering, it's the network that you're doing it in.
Yeah.
It creates bigger networks and opens bigger doors, and certainly that's my whole career has been based on that.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Now, I remember the next time after our chat, the next time I saw you, you appeared in a local newspaper come out, and I saw Todd Howard gets a gig going to Dubai, and I'm like, holy shit, what's this all about? It had my attention, that's for sure. So can you tell us about how that all came about?
Yeah, sure. So probably as much as it was for me when I received an email, it was a Wednesday. I was in the AOPT office at the time, and this email had come from a connection to the royal family in the UAE, and they'd asked or told me that I'd been sort of shortlisted as someone they were interested in to take over there and work with them and their connections through Egypt, Saudi, you know, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, everywhere. There's lots of different connections and the reasons why they wanted someone over there.
Yep.
And I remember looking at it going, it was spam. I was just one of those young, arrogant, I'll reply and see where this goes. And I replied and they said, we want to set up an interview at 10 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
I was like, 10 o'clock tonight? Like, I'll be in bed. And then they're like, well, that's fine, don't worry about it. And I'm like, hang on, all right, I'll get up. So I remember doing the interview that night, and that was my first realization of this might be real. Like, this is crazy. And then so it went within 4 days. I'd had my second interview. I'd got told to submit a program, a 12-week plan of how I'd manage that level of clientele across nutrition and travel and the whole wellness aspect of looking after them.
Yeah.
And then I told mum and dad at the time, and they all went, sure, it's rubbish, like get back to your job. And just being the only son that didn't go and do a trade, you know, it was already that, you know, you've wasted all this money at university, you've left teaching after wanting to be a teacher for 30 years, like you finally got in this brand, it's a passion you love, and now your buddy talking about going overseas and being a PT. And it was, you know, we spent a lot of time in that first 7 days with Fitness Australia really looking at the contracts over there and whether it was legit, because we're talking about at the time, you know, money that I was earning per year, they were paying per month. And that was like
12 extra income, just like that. Yeah.
This is you know, what I really want to do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had the support of my family at the time, and within 2 weeks, I'd been successful. I'd got the job.
Yep.
Packed my entire life up. Poor Timsy had lost me as an employee at the time.
You broke the news to him.
But he was really supportive of me going across at the time. It was a good opportunity. And off I went, packed my bags on the Dubai Emirates flight.
Yep.
And into Dubai like a rock star.
Good, man.
You know, at that age, it was like...
Yeah.
PT's the best job in the world.
Yeah.
For the next sort of 18 months, I still went backwards and forwards, month on, 2 weeks off, just living the dream. Using all their facilities and you know, I was supposed to train 7 days a week, get picked up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to head down and start my sessions with different groups of people. And some days you'd sit there and wouldn't even do a session, you know, but I was getting paid to be there.
Paid to play. So you would have got really fit and strong and
great, do a workout by yourself. But it really gave me a lot of time to write journals and study more and keep developing, because I was still a big advocate of, even though I felt like at the time I was like, that was the pinnacle of my career.
Yeah.
I knew it wasn't going to last forever.
Yeah.
And being a different country, different culture, different foods, different everything. It was like, none of this relates a lot back to Australia. So
sure.
I had to continue to educate myself.
How old were you when you went?
26 when I took off.
Yes.
And I landed in Ramadan at the time, and I didn't know what Ramadan was.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what's happening here? You know, what is this thing? So again, Googled at night, stayed one step ahead of it, culturally educated myself. And ended up sneaking food in my bag, in my pocket everywhere. But it was really tough, not only to understand and live in their culture, but also to train clients that hadn't eaten or had fasted all day. No matter who you are, whether you're a sheikh or whether you're an average human, you know, the human body still responds the same way. And that was something that I really had to go and re-educate myself on. So had a great journey there for sort of 18 months and met a huge amount of connections around the world and had a great time doing it. But then at that time, I sort of realized that it's either getting one or two directions, right? How long can I keep living away from home, living this dream?
Sure.
Or do I go back to Australia and take what I've learned and be a business owner, which was always my passion, to have my own gym,
like
as most PTs do. So I made the call to actually employ someone that I knew that was a really great trainer in Australia at the time. And I brought them over, built a relationship with them and one of the head doctors, one of the biggest medical sort of owners of pharmacies and that sort of stuff in the whole UAE that work with the Royals and set him up. That was his next dream. He was 21 at the time and thought it was like unbelievable. And so he lived in the villa that I was in and so I set him up. Obviously, I took a cut of what he earned, and that was, I guess, that start of my business brain thinking, I'm going to leverage.
Here we go. We've got passive income.
And now I can earn money when I go to bed tonight, because that bloke's over there training these guys and I'm going to earn some money out of him. And so I made the choice to come back to Australia in 2008.
Yeah.
And then, I guess figure out what I'm going to do next. And that was, for me, opening a gym.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
And it was probably just 6 to 12 months after Jets had just kicked off in Australia. And thought, that's me. That's the perfect thing. This 24-hour gym thing, which is in Europe now.
Yeah.
Australia'd never heard of it. And I'd seen it over there for the last 2 years. It was like, if you weren't 24-hour, you were 10 years old.
Yeah. I remember it. Hey, it was just such a new thing, wasn't it? And it was just so like, you know.
Everyone was gobsmacked. Like, no one's going to train at night. Like, what is this? What is this?
But
like, it was.
Is it just a gimmick, this thing?
And, you know, getting traction. And I had such a strong... I guess trajectory on where they were going to go.
Yeah.
I'm like, I've got all this money I've earned tax free and I'm this age and I could do one or two things. I can buy cars, jet skis, boats and blow it like most people at that age probably would.
Yeah.
Or I can invest it and set myself up to, you know, to be as big in the gym world as I felt I was in the PT world at the time.
Yeah.
And then started those conversations. And so I met with Jets when I got back. And
Brendan Levinson, good bloke.
Mate, they were a good team. Good team back then. And I remember sitting down saying with their GM at the time and saying, look, I want to put some gyms here. And she said to me, no, you can't do that. And I'm like, well, I want to buy that territory and that territory. And she's like, they're all sold.
Yeah.
What do you mean they're all sold? There's no gym there. And I didn't even realize that this is how it works. You buy the land and then you sit on that for a year. So all the whole of Brisbane was blocked out. And I was like,
okay,
that was my
this
first,
is not
like,
cool.
roadblock, right? And at the time I could have gone, okay, well, cool, I'll go and do something else. But again, I wasn't wired that way. It was like, there's another way around this.
And
I got introduced to to Rosie Barker and then Darren Schross and Leo McNeese, who had just sold Good Life and obviously stalwarts in the industry. And and they bought this Snap Fitness brand in from the US, which I'd never even heard of. But did some research on that, and same concept, obviously, you know, basically identical, same colours. These things are all bloody gimmicks. Everyone's going to do them now. But the best thing was it was new. I could have the whole state.
Yeah. So, take your pick.
So here I went. Put what money I had in and took some territories and then built. I was doing some work when I first got back with Sam Riley Swim Schools and David Noonan.
Yeah.
Who'd had a really good swim school brand here in Brisbane. And I remember saying to David and Sam, there's something in this. Like, we've got this room over here at the swim school that we don't use. It's tiny, but half these gyms are tiny. Let's look at this Snap franchise and stick it in there.
Yeah.
And we did. We opened the second Snap, I think it was, in Australia at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, 150 square meters of
150 space. Wow.
Like, and it's still there today.
Amazing. 150 square meters. It's And I guess that's originally the footprint of a 24-hour gym, right? Yeah, Small footprint.
Sub 300. It was keep your cost down and just a couple of treadies probably too many treadies, too much cardio back then and not enough weights. But the model's flipped on its head. But yeah, that was the model.
Wow. So
stay small and build multiple.
And that was in 08, was it?
Early 09, we opened Macrovap.
Yep.
And then Dave and Sam had another swim school at Everton Park. And then the shop came up next to that, so we thought we'll do that again. So we had, at the time, that little bit of capital, so put that into Everton Park, and we all went thirds in that one as well. And it worked well because the swim school fed all the clients we needed.
Very complimentary
journey. And
yeah,
still hustling on the side doing PT. And when you start off any business, you're in it all the time, right? I was the manager, I was the cleaner, I was the PT,
doing
everything.
Yeah.
And because Dave and Sam obviously focused with the swim schools, and my gig was the gym side of it.
Yeah.
So we did that, and one of my clients at the time, my PT clients, she said to me, "My husband wants to meet you. He watched what you've done in these two gyms here." And
yeah.
I said, "Okay, what does your husband do?" And she said, "Oh, he just owns a Harvey Norman franchise at Oxley." And so I had coffee with him, and he's like, "Man, I like what you're doing." He's like, How do I get involved?" And I said, "Well, it's just easy. Just give me your money." it's as simple as that. And I'd kind of, the banks had sort of started to tighten up. They were starting to say, "Look, you guys are all fresh. The model's unproven."
And sorry, at this stage, you are up to two.
We had two in sort of 9 months. So yeah, quick together.
So yeah, and I bet you for you, still learning. Like, you're still
a whole other world.
Yeah,
you know, I'm used to managing 20 clients and taking cash on weekends. It's a different world that we lived in. So we then opened the third one in Victoria Point.
Yeah.
And that was it. My money was spent. I had these three gyms, and I was
I thought I was tapped out, couldn't do any more. Yeah, in terms of your ability to
CapEx was zero. The banks are like, you know, give me 12 more months of
This is all on the back end of GFC, all that time.
Correct. Yep. Like, everything's tightening up, and there's jets are building everywhere, and anytime's come in now, and it's like this model's growing. So how sustainable is it? It was the fastest growing, I guess, fitness trend that Australia had ever seen. Rightly so, the banks went, let's see what 12 months of this looks like.
Yeah.
And me being impatient, I didn't have 12 months to wait. I had these grand plans of like going over and over and over and over, but how could I do that?
Yeah.
And meeting Phil from Harvey's, you know, he said, "Look, I've got some capital. I want to put some money in, and I'll do one with you. And if it works, I'll tap you into my network of you know, Harvey's franchisees." And
yeah,
at the time, you know, Harvey's were flying. It was a great retail brand.
Yeah.
And for those that don't understand the Harvey's model, they're not allowed to invest actively in any other brand because they're obviously a public company. So they got to focus on their own franchises. And so I said, "Great." So I did one with Phil. That worked. And as a PT, I learned that it wasn't about the money I could make off you as a client. It was about how much money I could make off you and your connections.
Yes.
And my whole career has been built on network. There is far more wealth to be built by building a good brand network than there is about building an individual business. And there's a lot for the PTs out there that are growing now, it's like your billable time is always going to be the same as what it is now. It's going to be the same in 10 years' time. We've all got the same amount of time every day to train a client.
Yep.
But how can you use that time with that client to make passive money down the track?
Yeah.
What has that client got that you can take by building a rapport with them? And I had a great relationship with my clients, as all good PTs do.
Yeah.
And so they sort of saw the benefit,
the potential .
This guy's the hungriest guy I've ever seen, and yeah. I was passionate about helping people, and now I can help people 24 hours a day. It didn't matter, no excuses about, you know, I'm shift worker or I'm this or I've got three kids and I've got no spare time or whatever. Like, all the excuses you get as a PT, well, it's done now. You've got 24 hours a day and you can come train wherever you like. And it was like, we're seeing about 3% of our database train at night time. And it was a really cool thing to see evolving in Australia.
Yeah. And I think it was one of the first questions back in the day, wasn't it? Does anyone actually come in the middle of the day? Yeah, they do.
And now, you know, I don't know what the stats are, probably on average, you know, you would see somewhere between 50 and 100 people training actively in a snap club between, say, 9 p.m. and 5 a.m.
Wow. Yeah.
People are just flexible with that, particularly in different areas of the country where shift working is prevalent, or different cultural backgrounds. People, you know, will eat and kids will go to bed and they'll still be out doing stuff at 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
We've got clubs, you know, Sunnybank, Canterbury, Bankstown in Sydney, you know, peak times 10 p.m.
Yeah.
That's when that culture is sort of actively training.
It's amazing. It's like that European culture, isn't it? You know, so it's like, you know, go over to France, whatever, you don't go out to dinner until 10:30, 11 o'clock, right?
So as a PT that wants to help everyone, it's like all my barriers have been taken away. So I can now help you no matter who you are. And so it was a fantastic sort of relationship I had with Phil and be lucky enough that worked. Again, at the time, I didn't have any money, so I said to him, I need everyone's money. And he said, well, what do you bring to the party? And I said, well, I'd just bring me. Like, I bring my passion and my IP and my energy to grow this. And and he was like, don't know if it's going to cut it. Like, everyone wants to see someone have skin in the game. And listening to your interview with Timmy West, it was really, really interesting to hear Timmy say when he started that, you know, he didn't put any capital in, right? His capital was his brain and his passion and his energy. And to me, now looking back, that was worth every dollar that everyone else put in ultimately, because no one would have made money out of that investment without that passionate human that wants to turn up and drive that business every day. And there are so many great PTs in the country right now that have that drive and that passion that don't have the capital.
Yep.
And that's why, you know, now 10 years later, I've got the opportunity to be able to give shares to my PTs and give shares to my staff that I see have the same passion that I had 10 years ago.
Yes.
And they can then use that now to start their journey. I'm building a FitStop at the moment. For those that don't know, you know, Snap are an equity partner now in FitStop globally. And
gotcha.
So we're allowed to open FitStop franchises. And and so, you know, the FitStop franchise I'm doing now, I've given 5% away to my GM, who's, you know, he's 30 years of age. He's got more passion than I had 10 years ago. And I could see, you know, without the avenue, without the door, he wouldn't be able to get in, or it'd be another 10 years before he could get in.
Yeah.
This industry is so difficult at the moment to get in at the top level.
Yeah.
So being able to give back now in the same way is fantastic. Super important. But at that window, you know, I was like, no, you can invest in me. You got to trust me. And it was my confidence, I guess, in presenting to these investors to say, you know, you put your money in and I'll give you a return. I had no idea if I was going to give them a fucking return. Right? It could have all gone belly up.
All you know is I'm going to fucking go for it, right?
But you got to back yourself, right? Yeah. There's no point thinking about it. I'm going to make you money.
Yeah.
And if I don't, I'll worry about that. I'll worry about that then. And it's like PTs now that's, you know, you sign up someone and they, we were talking before on air today saying that too many PTs want to be great at everything now because they feel like they've got to be successful. Mm. And you can't cut through and be successful if you're trying to be, you know, a weight loss coach and a prep coach and a bodybuilding coach and nutrition coach and a boxing expert. Yeah. And like, fuck, you can't be everything. Like, you've got to hone in on that niche and be great at it. And for us in that 24-hour market, it was honing in on tapping into a market that wasn't the fitness first, good life market, the big box clubs. We could never be that. We couldn't offer Les Mills, but we could be great at offering what we could.
Yeah.
That's what you had to do. You had to convince people that it was safe to come at night time. It was safe to train when there was no one there.
Yeah.
There was no staff to help you because they were staffed by one human, right? So understanding the whole customer service aspect of 24-hour gyms, we had to overcome all those barriers. But wind back the clock, you know, it worked with Phil. Phil introduced me to the Harvey's Network, and all of a sudden I was raising capital like I was a bank. And
wow, that's cool.
And all these people just backed me.
Yeah, and it sounds like that part really enabled you to leverage SoToGo, because you're at that was your third. Three, you guys opened together, and then from there it was
three to eight was super quick. Yeah, and that's probably nearly what broke us in realizing that we needed to be far better in the back end of our business. We couldn't just keep opening units without starting to build a brand around that.
Because you started to become stretched, I imagine, in terms of
we went to Melbourne. Like, number four was in Melbourne, number five was in Canberra, number six was in Sydney. So all of a sudden I'd gone to four states in 18 months.
Yeah.
And it was just me and one of my offsiders like running this gig.
Yeah.
And we're putting on this show to investors like we're bigger than who we are. But but I think in business, that's what it's about. It's about talk that game and then figure out underneath how you're going to get the result.
Yeah.
You've either got that drive or you don't. And if you don't, that's those businesses that'll keep turning and rolling, right? But you look about the Peak Physiques and the Fit Bodies and those brands that you've built, and now the brand that I've been able to build, it's just purely built on I can make it great because I've got the passion to make it great.
Yeah.
And you circle around great people, and great people want to be around great people, and all of a sudden you create a network of great people, and you're able to grow because you've got expertise in different areas. And that's sort of, I don't know, to me that was the most influential piece of information I ever got from Jerry Harvey, which was don't be the guy that grows your business from the inside. You need to get that team of people that are going to grow the business for you, and you need to be able to sit on the outside and strategically manage how you go forward, because if you get buried on the inside, you'll get spat out on the inside very quickly.
Yeah, and become the bottleneck, you know.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. So the journey sort of took off from there. I had sort of 20, 25 investors that were just throwing money at me to do whatever I wanted with it.
And yeah.
Snap loved it because we were building clubs left, right and center. And and it was amazing. I went from East Coast to West Coast and was having a great time. I got up to about maybe 20 clubs.
Yeah.
And I didn't need the investors anymore because now I had enough passive income. And you got to remember, all that time that I had the investors, I was taking equity for free.
Yeah.
So it was the Timmy West model from 2006, right? It was like, well, I've got the brains.
Yeah.
You need me as much as I need you.
Yeah.
We need each other. So my IP and my strategy and my knowledge was worth capital.
Yeah.
And I look back now and think about some of those deals I did, and I think, man, that was so aggressive, like to go in and to paint a picture. I was taking 50% of the business, right, with no capital.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I was charging them a management fee.
Yeah.
On top line revenue. Like, that doesn't even exist these days. Like, not even EBITDA share. Like, I was like, top line revenue, I'm taking 10%. And these guys are like,
let's do it.
Like, without you, we've got nothing.
That's and right.
Like, at the time, 24 Hour Gyms were returning 25, 35, 45% ROI per year on CapEx.
That's right. Well, I guess they look at then going, if I put my cash into something else, you know, what does that return me?
And buy a house over there and earn 5% and be boring.
Yeah.
Or I can take the risk here, like playing the share market with this guy who tells me he's going to make it work. But
now, that that IP that you had, that knowledge and the experience, that enabled you then to create another arm to the TBH, I guess, the consulting part. So do you want to share that, how that part would look?
Yeah, so I got to a point, I guess, when we got to about, I think at the time, maybe 40 or 50 locations across Australia, and I was trying to figure out how do I make money out of my knowledge and IP without opening more clubs, because I didn't want to continue to grow more clubs.
Yeah.
But I wanted to be able to make more money and grow my brand based on the knowledge I'd learned on building, selling, running, operating, you know, 24-hour gyms and recruiting trainers and recruiting good people.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, hang on, it's just my knowledge, just my brain. So I went to Snap and I sort of said, look, what if we set up this program where you can sell franchises to people, and if they're not actively involved in the business and they're worried about their investment, they can sign a deal with me.
Yeah.
And I'll take their clubs into TBH Group and we'll run them as part of our program, and protects the brand, protects the investment of the individual. And allows, at the time, the brand to grow more franchise in Australia. So TBH Group kind of took another whole arm of consulting on, and we were taking on franchise and even existing franchises of people that had built them and were struggling with managing them, because at the time everyone thought, we'll just build them, they run themselves.
Yeah,
These things are easy, right?
A mum and dad investor bought a gym, happy days, let it run.
24 hours, you swipe in, it's irrelevant. But soon quickly realised that, like any business, it doesn't run by itself, and you have to invest some time into it. And And so those people then started giving their clubs back to us to manage, rebuild, put the systems and structure into place to safe bet them on making sure that their investment was going to be safe. And
yeah,
it was good. It was good on both sides. I was earning good money from that.
Yeah.
I wasn't working any harder for the money because I already had the infrastructure.
Well, you had the IP. You pretty much trained a HQ'd it, you know.
Plug. And
you found, you found a business with inside a business, right? You're already in it. You knew the systems and processes and you saw a problem and it's like, all right, well, I know the solution, you know.
Yeah, and it was the same principles as being a PT to pre and postnatal. It was like, we're all PTs, we've got the same knowledge, but if I just go after that one little niche market, I can charge more because everyone invests
specialist.
Money in weddings and weddings and babies, two things people spend a lot of money on. And same thing here, people have invested $500,000 into a franchise.
Yeah.
And where I'm a dentist or I'm a lawyer or I'm a bricklayer.
Yeah.
It's risky, right?
That's right.
So give this guy here 50 grand a year, whatever the fee might be to run it for me.
Yeah.
It's a set and forget. But for me, that 50 grand was just pure bottom line profit because I wasn't doing anything different. I was just plugging that system into that business. So very, very, very similar to, I guess, how you build all your businesses and the fact that the overarching principle is the same. Which is keep plugging into different locations. That strategy works. If you follow it and you listen to us and you follow those principles, you will be successful.
That's
if you
want
to take bits of it and manipulate it.
That's right.
You run the risk.
There's a system. There's a process here.
Yeah, don't reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
You didn't have to. Like by this stage, it's 2014, 2015. Like the 25 model was built. You didn't have to be differently unique. You just need to be brilliant at what you did to set yourself against the three or four other main brands that were building at the same time.
Yeah.
And for me, it was the trust game. I'd built that many clubs that quickly. I had good returns. My EBITDA looked amazing. So for any investor, it's a no-brainer. Right? Do I put in someone who's got a proven record or do I not? We were lucky all the BRW magazines were coming out and Jets and Snap are all in the top couple of businesses to invest in and they helped us continue to grow on and on from there. And so then my brain went, well, I need more again. It was just that, you know, how do I get more? How do I build more?
Yeah.
And so, 2015, decided that going to the UK would be a good idea.
Yep.
Rightly or wrongly, let's go global.
Yeah.
And so Snap had sort of just ventured into the UK and I'd bought into the master rights there to develop another country. And so I was doing, 4 weeks on, 4 weeks Australia, 4 weeks UK. And and that was probably a really good lesson for me to understand that there is a limit where you reach your capacity when you start to impact other areas of your business. And as much as we were doing great things in the UK, it was taking away the time I could spend on my Australian business, which was where the money was coming from.
Yeah.
Right? You've always got to protect that bottom line.
Yeah, yeah.
And
look after the house.
That's it.
Yep.
That's it. The bank's here. And that was a great gig and obviously great to be over there and then sell out.
Yeah.
Obviously now it's back owned by the owners of Snap, the UK market. But it was a good learning curve as well to go over there and, again, do what I was brilliant at here and do that in another country, different laws, different systems, different PT structures.
Yeah, I imagine the learning curve must have been huge, hey?
But, by this stage I'm in my 30s and you never stop learning. It's always like, how do I be better at what I'm doing?
Yeah.
I look at back my entire career as a PT, teacher, business owner now, every day it's about how do I do that better, quicker, easier, systemize that, and then who around me has got the skill set to take that off me that's going to go and do that as good as I can do it.
Yeah.
And obviously that's one of the biggest lessons in business, right? Is, and we was talking about it earlier, create a good network of people and allow them to be part of the journey and reward them accordingly.
Mm.
And I guess I've been able to do that now with staff that have got shares in different companies, different brands, and I'm all for that. And that's what's helped me create that trust in our, particularly our executive team, that they can run the business so I can sit here and talk to you and not worry about, what's happening around the country today and who's called in sick and
which that's
PTs
right.
are in trouble.
And I've had direct interactions with your crew and just, so professional and so easy to deal with, that's the other part.
So I
imagine a huge network of trainers under the 40 clubs.
And I'm lucky enough to have a PT director that deals with that for me. And Simon, again, been in the industry a long time. He was my club manager back when I opened my fifth club in 2010, and so he's come on the journey from day one. And the one thing that I learned about PTs when I started being a business owner was that they can be difficult humans to manage. And for someone who's done it for as long as you have, I commend you. But the thing about PTs is that for every 10, there's three or four rock stars.
Yeah.
There's three or four people that are always going to be okay. And there's a couple of people that aren't going to be there, you know, in 6 months' time doing it as a career.
Yeah.
So when you've got all these clubs and you're trying to bring PTs on where there's PT jobs everywhere, look on Seek, there's 20 pages of them, right? And I sort of said to Simon, it's not about growing and giving a job to every PT. It's about finding the PTs that have got the same strategic directional or want or why that we want.
Yeah.
And then go after them.
Yeah.
Because the time we invest in educating our PTs in our little brand is phenomenal. You know, we put them through 12 weeks worth of training. We onboard them. We teach them the business economics that they don't learn at college. And obviously that's your whole brand's built on that.
Yeah.
Because that is the difference between churn and burn and quality. And our model, we quickly realized that I make more money by having a PT in my gyms paying no rent, but servicing my members and building a PT culture and helping with retention.
Well, it is the greatest form of member retention, isn't it?
And there will never be a better one. It hasn't changed in 20 years I've been in the industry.
Yeah.
And for us now, it's about I want them in there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to retire on the rent they're going to pay or the profit share I might be able to go with them.
Yeah.
But if you can handpick those ones that have that passion, that same passion that I had when I started, then they're the ones you want in there because they're the ones that are on the floor talking to your members, delivering products both for money and for time and for networking opportunities.
Yeah.
All of that gets wrapped back around to me and my brand. Mm. And if I can get my retention back by 1%, then that's worth way more to me than the rent. I'm going to get two or three trainers that I might have in that location.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where we sort of had to really change our approach towards PT recruitment.
Yeah, it's so cool. I remember a conversation we had probably about almost 10 years ago when we were chatting about this stuff and you were venting some of the frustrations about that revolving door, and you said to me, like, you know, hey, I will give a trainer fucking free rent if they promise to stay for 12 months, get them, put their effort in, get themselves fully booked to keep clients coming back. You know, I guess you just had you'd seen that, but now you've got the system.
Their success, right? Like, I think it's fantastic. The PTs, I've got a PT in Melbourne that works for me. That I don't know, he would be, I think he's up to about, I don't know. He's probably gonna watch this back and go, no, those numbers are wrong. But I'm gonna go out on a limb and say, is it around 60 to 80 sessions a week?
Oh, wow.
It could even be 100, right?
Jesus.
Now this guy lives and breathes fitness from 4 a.m. till 9 p.m, 6-7
Cyborg.
Days a week. Like literally, like he's the pinnacle of PTs. He's won awards. And I look at guys like that and the one thing that we could then value add to someone who's obviously top of their game was like, how do you leverage that? Like billable time as a PT doesn't change. So going into models where we have 1.5 times earnings, and so between 5 and 8 a.m., your hourly rate's worth 1.5 times to you, and then between 9 and 3, it's 0.8 or 0.7.
Yeah.
And then you want me again 4 to 6, that's going to be 1.5 times again. So trying to teach PTs to get more out of their billable time, and people will pay it because then you've got the bank of clients, you've got the trust in the clients, you're good at what you do. And so
6 a.m. on a Monday, you can only sell it once, right? On your calendar, you know, how many times could you sell it?
We talked about it. Like, I can't advertise on the front page of the Courier Mail for the same price as page 46.
That's right.
So why are you charging the same at 6 a.m. as you do at midday? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
When you're starting off, great, do whatever you can, sell your soul. But once you start to build a bank, you need to start to be creative. And then from there, obviously, the whole online business and the rest of the, you know, programming and the way PT's gone this day is a whole nother era, but it's certainly not our era. But it's but that's something we're very passionate about now, is making sure that when our PTs come on board, they are coached and developed and using programs like yours to understand that there is more to PT than flogging someone for 45 minutes, taking $60 cash, not paying tax and thinking you're a rock star. But those days are gone. Those days are short-lived for PTs that want to operate in that space.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And there's a whole world of opportunity out there. And, you know, those that understand it, those that get it, it's actually not that hard, you know, to put the right systems into place. And we find within 12 months, you know, someone with the right strategy, the right mindset can do all that, put themselves in a great position. So...
again, the model's been done. I mean, you've written the model. Yeah. It's not like you've made it up and you've never used it. And, and that's where PTs that are coming through need to understand that once you've done your course and you've got, you know, you've got your 4 out of 10, we call it in relation to your knowledge to be a 10.
Yeah.
You've got to now get from 4 to 10. You can only get from 4 to 10 through add-on courses, mentors, or again, working with people who are gonna make you a better practical trainer.
Yeah,
being book smart unfortunately doesn't cut it in this day and age.
Yeah, and there's absolutely no reason, in my opinion, in 2023, why any personal trainer in a rent based position can't be doing in excess of $2,000 per week for PT. You know, you go $80 a session conservatively. You know, 25 sessions a week, 5 sessions a day, 5 days a week, 45 minute session. It's 17.5 hours of work. It's a part-time job.
Literally. And that's what amazes me when I see PTs applying for manager jobs with us. And I think, man, like, why? Like, we're paying 60, 70 grand a year as a manager to work 40 hours a week and working like long hours, doing admin and paperwork. Sure, you get to go to work in runners every day. But if your passion is fitness and your passion is changing lives, you can't have the impact as a manager that you can have as a PT.
Yeah.
So why are you here? You're here because you can't run your PT business with 20 clients. Why am I going to trust you to run 1,000 clients and a multi-million dollar business?
You're going to be a very frustrated manager.
Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? So I think those that have got the knowledge and the passion sometimes need the guidance.
Yeah.
But those that are trying that quick fix or, you know, use the industry for the wrong reasons, they're obviously the ones that we need to weed out and change the. I don't know what the stats are at the moment, but I think when I went through that AIPT era and probably post 5 years of that, we were only seeing less than 10% of PTs that were graduating that year still doing it as a full-time job 12 months later. And to think about it, if we were churning, I think, 10,000 students a year, I think at that time between IAF and AIPT and the other courses that were around.
Yeah, there was many for a period there.
Like, you did the numbers, right? Yeah, 10,000 a year, where just
the industry didn't grow by that.
There was no infrastructure because no one was doing what you're doing now around making sure that this is a business.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually, as much as you're doing a bench press or a squat or a lunge, like it's still a business.
Yeah.
So recurring income and setting clients up on automatic billing and having a good system and understanding that PT is about managing your client's life, not about managing that client for 45 minutes that you see them twice a week. You need to be a part of their lifestyle, build that rapport and that respect, and all of a sudden that client will build your business for you. It's not about going out and finding new clients every week and prospecting. Clients will come to you.
Yep.
And there's great examples of PTs that have been doing it for a long time now. My mentors, you know, Lee and those guys, Lee's still doing it. Mate, the guy's got to be 100 now and he's still floating around in Brisbane somewhere doing
he's a champion.
Doing PT. And you think those are the guys that these up-and-coming PTs need to spend time with to respect and understand the industry is a really serious one. And it's a really, really successful one if you want to put everything into it. It can be super rewarding. And think about 20 years ago, you charging the fees that you were. Like, that's to think about what that would be worth now. And I mean, when I was overseas, work out the metrics, I was probably on $1,200 an hour. Like, it was ludicrous money, right? Ludicrous money.
It's not bad. You can't live off it, hey, but it's a start, isn't it? You know?
Mate, we're all aspiring to be PU back in the day with your $400 an hour sessions that we're all laughing about. But ultimately, the PTs that are coming out now doing, you know, dollar a minute sessions and stuff, you just think, where's your worth?
Yeah.
You know, what's your worth? And as a business owner now that understands that I've got 1,000 members in gyms we want 25% of them to have PTs minimum.
Yeah.
Because we know that if we can get PTs engaged with our clients in that onboarding process,
they'll keep coming back.
They stay.
Yeah.
You know, you let them go 4, 6, 8 weeks without a PT and they get lost in that journey of like, this place is not for me. I don't feel comfortable. And if you're this big buff-head PT that, you know, doesn't understand how to communicate and set up a business and build rapport and respect and trust with the client, they're not going to come to you anyway. And being around gyms and being in gyms and trying to get our PTs to be there as much as you can, because not everyone wants to pick up the phone and ring you off your profile board. You know, they want to see you training clients. They want to understand how you interact to then say, I really like what that client does. I really like what that PT does. And get yourself out there to be approachable.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the keys to PTs now. Don't wait for the phone to ring. Like, you need to be there living it, running the footpath, you know.
Yeah.
Think about back when I started Snap, back when I was a PT, back when I was an AIPT, like, you are literally hustling every day.
Yeah.
And people say now, do I miss PT? Of course I do. The one thing I miss about PT is being able to have personal influence on someone's life that you can take from journey A to journey B.
Yeah.
But I guess indirectly now I get to do that to, you know, 50 or 60,000 people that are in my gyms around the country that hopefully in some way, indirectly, I'm helping become a better person.
Yeah.
And the hundreds of trainers that we work with.
That's right. The career opportunities you've provided.
Opening because I you know, forever, this will be my passion.
Yeah.
And I talk about retiring every year and you know, it's just something I'll never be able to sort of separate, I guess, because it's of the why. What is my why? It was to make money and be successful, but it was about changing the impact and having an impact and having an opportunity for people to be changed. And I think I've met some fantastic PTs along, you know, my journey, and every year we recognize PTs in our network and reward them with courses and opportunity. Because that was my break.
Yeah.
You know, people say you're super lucky to get that gig overseas. I wasn't lucky. I worked my ass off to get to where I did.
That's right.
And I was recognized for it at that time. I didn't win the lotto. I didn't pull it out of a hat.
That's right. The study, everything you put in.
Yeah. That's where you got to. And Stephen Grubby talks about the same thing. You know, he talks about the fact that people say it was lucky to win that medal. No, because no one saw the thousands and thousands of hours that guy skated and trained before he got to that Olympics. And it's that concept that I think up-and-coming trainers need to realize it's not about where you start.
Yeah.
It's understanding why you became a PT and then surrounding yourself with great people to become a great trainer and put yourself in great environments and make sure the people you work with and work alongside share that same passion to bring you along.
Yeah, yeah. And one of those key takeaways the whole way through, I guess I've just been hearing about, you know, building that network, you know. So, and you know it, I know it, we've both experienced it, but it's those people that you've got around you that can really open the doors.
And you never stop learning. Like, I mean, I go about lunches and dinners and events every week and it can be completely irrelevant to fitness, but there'll be someone there that'll, you know, be able to have a conversation with that they'll open a door somewhere else.
Yeah.
Whether it be they want to train, whether it be they want to invest, whether it be they've got an idea to invest in. I mean, I get offers every week now to put my money in places, and I was, you know, lucky enough to catch up with Toby Pierce last week for dinner. And, you know, for those that know Toby and the journey of sweat, Toby and Kayla were PTs of mine in 2011 in Glenelg in Adelaide. I met both of them and I gave them both a job. And and I said to Toby last week, we went back and was reading some emails between Toby, Kayla and I back then about, you know, can we take our boot camps out of the gym and run them in the park across the road? We want to build this. So we just want to specialize in teenagers or females sort of 18 to 25. And Toby kept saying to me, he thought I was a rock star. I think at the time I had maybe 10 gyms. And he's like, mate, one day I'm going to be where you're at now. And I'm thinking, wow. And I'm like, I'm doing all right. maybe people are looking up to me. And I watched that journey of sweat develop and the passion that Toby had in building a commodity around Kayla and her brand that became obviously the biggest fitness brand in the world.
Yeah,
sold for stupid amounts of millions. It was wild. Last year. And
you know, such a great success story. You know,
out of two little Aussies. In
having a crack
in Adelaide, having a go, right? But it showed again that wasn't a dream, but it was a dream that he followed with passion.
Yeah,
and they both worked so hard at doing that. And I think there's so many similarities. We talked about at dinner last week around what he's doing now and what I'm doing now, and the fact that we're doing so many things that are in the industry, out of the industry, but directly it comes back to that networking piece.
Yeah.
The fact that the people that we're meeting along the way open the next door and open the next door. And I've been lucky enough to be involved in other franchises in Australia over the last 10 years that I've been able to either assist financially to set up, be a part of the structure, the systems, the strategy. And that's the cool thing about our industry, right? That we meet some cool people.
Love
it. And who doesn't want to go to work every day and runners and, you know, turn up in board meetings in you know, my gym gear and I hate putting on a suit, right? But and I think out of all the gigs I've been to of yours, it's the same thing. Like we live in a really cool industry.
That's
and we
right.
work with cool people every day.
Yeah.
That it's not about that. It's not about what I look like. It's about what comes out of my mouth and what my desired passion is. To assist you and what I've got to offer and what you've got to offer me. And if we can learn from each other, that network is phenomenal. And we live in a great country. We live in a great environment. Obviously, the last couple of years been tough with COVID, but we navigated that well. And you know, one of the biggest things we learned through that process is that communicating with clients and communicating with our people was pivotal in them sort of getting guided and helped with us, and we really supported our PTs and our staff through that time.
That's right.
To help people understand the benefit of wellness and the benefit of the fitness journey, come out the other side, and here we are, right? We're in a new world now. We do things differently, and
yeah.
What's next? Who knows?
Well, mate, I've observed your lifestyle, and mate, you've got the fruits of all this, which is fantastic. So, you know, I see you up on your boat. You got young family. It's all, you know, you're in a great spot. What does the future hold for you? What's on the horizon?
Mate, it's a good question. every week I think about that, but for me now, I am in a situation where I drive nice cars, I've got a nice boat, I've got a nice house, I've got a beautiful family, and you know, I still get up 6 days a week and work, and that's something that I'm super passionate about.
Yeah,
as much as people around me think, man, it's time to slow down. Like I'm 43 going on 21. Like I still feel like I'm 21. I think that's the benefit of our industry, that we're surrounded with people that have got good energy all the time. So that drags us through and gets a bit more longevity. But
yeah.
Look, the future for me, we're going to consolidate a little bit in our fitness world. Again, give some opportunities to some people that we've bought through to be able to buy some clubs off us and move some off our books and get more, probably halve our network in the next sort of 5 years back to sort of a core group, so that it's a bit more manageable for me as I move through the next stage. But for me, a bit more involved at a corporate level with the franchisor, spending a lot of time with them on the board stuff and making sure that we're forecasting and looking at where the industry is going in the next 5 or 10 years. One thing I'm very passionate about now that I wasn't when I started fitness is the wellness side of fitness. And for those that know me, we have a wellness center in Bondi it's a special center that's dedicated for allied health and pure recovery, and it's got a gym attached to it as well. And I think that is where the next part of my life will go, in building wellness centers and tapping wellness into our Snap Fitness model. Our clubs are sort of getting to the point where they're big enough now to be unique and be different, and circling back to me, you know, specializing in pre and postnatal and trying to be cut through in 1% of people that want to do it. It's the same thing now. I feel like if I can be the person that, you know, brings wellness into the 24-hour model and with saunas and ice bars and things that can be managed in that industry, that's what people want.
Yeah.
You know, people want to get more out of the commodity of fitness. And I think we talk a lot about rehab and a lot about, you know, training and preventative stuff, but there's a lot more we can be doing as a community to be ahead of the curve in that. And whether that be understanding nutrition better or you know, the whole hot and cold contrast therapy and what that does. I just think there's a big gap in our knowledge and our preventative stuff that we don't do yet in Australia.
Like you said, a huge opportunity to be able to provide that for people, you know. So
I think 10 years ago people looked at infrared saunas and thought they gave us cancer and they're going to be the next sunbeds, right? And we've come a long way from that, and understanding the benefits of, you know, of lots of different wellness concepts that we have now. And and I think that's probably become more of a passion of mine in the last couple of years since COVID, and having more time to understand how do we do more than just get up, go to the gym, run. I never want to be a CrossFit athlete. And you mad fuckers that want to go out there and throw weight around.
Flog yourself the whole time.
But it's
that's where the ice bath comes in handy.
Say, right? I'll just build wellness centers around all the CrossFit centers and tap into that audience. But
and a physio.
That's it. But it's good. You know, in Bondi, we've got this ability that you can train in the gym. You can do Pilates. You can see a physio, a chiro, get a massage. We've got nutritionists on board. You know, there's saunas, ice baths, there's recovery pants, there's, you know, hopefully soon IV.
Yeah.
So it's all under one roof.
Good for hangovers. And
pump it in Sunday morning. But that's the future. It's like the Woolworths model, right? If the lazy consumer wants to buy their meat, their fruit and veg and their groceries at the one store, the people that are conscious, they'll go there to do this, they'll go there to do that, because they think it's premium, right? Yeah. So we can create a premium model under one roof.
One stop shop.
Great PTs and a great program that you can get pregnant, injured, you know, need mental support, all under the same roof and be part of the one brand or one model.
Yeah.
I feel like that's where our future's going. People are spending more now on wellness, and I heard Timmy West say in your last podcast that back when we started, PT was for the wealthy, and I 100% agree with what Tim said. But now it's actually the opposite. It's actually if you don't have a PT now, you're actually not the norm. Mm. Like PT is an affordable commodity.
Yeah.
But the PT product needs to be quality. Otherwise, you churn and burn.
Yeah.
And that's sort of where it comes back to how you run your business, how you set your business up, how you run your clients, how you manage your clients. Your clients should be family. My staff to me are like family. My clients in my gyms to me when I go in them, they have to get my time. They want my time. They want to have a chat. By investing that time, I'm investing in that retention. And it's exactly the same concept whether you're a PT, whether you're a manager of a gym or anyone in any business. If you're a customer-facing consumer product, they need to see value. You're taking money out of my account every week. Some weeks I realize, some weeks I don't. But ultimately, when I do realize it, if I can see value in that $20 or that $50 or that $100 that might come out, it gets pushed through and we move on again.
Yeah. Right?
But if I don't see that value,
yep,
that's the things I'm going to start cutting out.
Yep. Love it, man. Love it. Oh, Jesus, man. I could sit here and talk all day to you about this. And I'm sure there's plenty more topics we could cover off on. But, mate, I just want to say, look, from my perspective, like I said at the start, it's just such an inspiration to watch your journey right from the beginning when we first spoke to watching you, you know, move into the industry, buy the first club, all that part. But, like, more importantly, what you do and I guess the way that you give back, the team you've built and the people you help. So I guess, like I want to say, just such an inspiration. And I guess the message for anyone out there is that there are just so many opportunities out there, and so find the right person that can assist you to do that and go for it. So I just want to say from my perspective and everyone listening, thank you very much for giving up your valuable time to come along and share all this wisdom.
No, pleasure. And as I said, you know, we hear every day PTs when we speak to them, you know, what's your goals? Where do you want to be? And they're like, well, I guarantee 90% of PTs will always say, I want to own a gym one day. And that's just a cliche, right?
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, the doors are there. And I think the difference between whether they get there or not is just pure personal choice.
Yeah.
And I grew up in a family with no money and I didn't get handed anything to me. And I think I'd look at those challenges and those wins, and they all just came from understanding my why. And then not just understanding it, but then creating that plan of how to get there. And I think all the PTs that are coming through these days and the people that you have through your college, you know, 90% of them want to own their own business too. And it's understanding, okay, well, how do I get from this point to that point and utilizing the things that you guys have got in place that are proven people like us that can put, you know, put placements out there and have trainers part of our brands.
That's right.
That have got those opportunities to open those doors. That's the exciting part of our industry and the exciting part of hopefully what we can share going forward over the next, you know, hopefully decade of owning gyms and staying in the industry, but sharing my time between the Whitsundays and home and balancing being a dad. But super excited. I really appreciate the opportunity. I know it's been a battle trying to find 3 hours of my time to lock out to come and catch up with you. But mate, pumped to sort of continue to be mates personally as well as professionally and see where the journey goes for both of us in the next decade.
Love it, brother. Love it.
Awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Todd Howard.